It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pennies Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy.
On this episode of Pennies Going in Raw, we talk about Elon's destructive Tesla tweet, this week in the market, and reviewing Hughes' mistakes.
You find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello? 40% right is a fucking killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IVEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, fuck, man, I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies.
Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips,
and Hugh Henny.
Produced by Vinny
and Christian.
Let's go, baby.
Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Wednesday, November the 10th, and the market's staying hot. We can always just say that over and over and over again, but I mean, do you want to go over any trades or anything that you've seen in the past 2 days?
Nah, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, this is different, though, than what we've seen the last, like, 2-3 weeks, because it's not so much theme trading. What we saw last 2 or 3 weeks was more like the entire sector would move, or like everything that ran together would move. And now it's more like individual names, which, like, I that's not my favorite. Personally, that's not my favorite kind of trading, because it's not like, usually I can sit there and just basically accumulate an entire basket and, you know, maybe 3 of the 6 will run, something like that. Now it's kind of like the sympathies aren't going as far. You know, like there's a push, but there's not like a 20% move. And the different runners based on like the news, which is fine. It's just because the runner's still running. It's just I like it better when it's, you know, easier. And to me, easier is when the theme trading is working and I can accumulate a basket, and, you know, that's what works best for me. So, oh, and the other thing that we're seeing is that moves are getting killed later in the day. You know, we're seeing a lot of moves that are happening intraday, and actually from the short side is really good opportunities, because some of these moves that are happening, you know, during the day, and these stocks that are flying during the day are actually ending close to red or in after hours getting absolutely smoked, which is a really interesting thing, because it's like the algos are working to long side and then they're flipping short, like 2:30, 3:30 p.m. and kind of like they're really smoking them. Like if you were buying a dip on a few of them at 3:30, 3:45, I mean you're literally getting smoked.
Okay, so kind of one thing that we talked, well, two things actually that we talked about last week. The first was I know we recorded on Thursday, so it was a little bit before, you know, we didn't have a full week of knowing, but you said you were kind of taking some of the money out of the market because Thursday was a little bit less safe. Friday wasn't a terrible day, but as the week has gone by, are you still holding that sentiment of, you know, I'm still holding off a little bit, or are we back, as you like to say, flooring it to the pedal?
I mean, I'm still floor to the pedal. It's just different because I'm definitely not chasing right now. Like what I mean by that is that, you know, before chasing was working no matter what. And now it's like you can still get chopped up. Even if the play does work, you know, it's just not as easy, if you will. And so that being said, I think it's more of like a, if we have like a super green flag and then like a semi green and then like a green, and then, you know, you go into the yellows, I think we're at like a green or moving to a semi green, or maybe it's a semi green moving to a green.
Like, I mean, just today you saw SOPA. I think it opened around $8 and it high a day on like 55. I mean, I remember looking at it. Someone was like, take a look at this at 23. And now look at it a couple hours later, it's halted up again at 50. And, you know, it's one of those things where if it was last week, hell, I might have ended up buying some at the 23, which I did anyways. I mean, what do you think? Does that move mean anything for a lot of the other IPOs? Or,
yeah, no, that definitely should mean something. It doesn't necessarily mean that all the IPOs will go, but that'll be something where, you know, you can stick it inside the back of your head that, you know, this is what this one did. You know, and this is one where if any IPOs really start to go that are similar, then I'll pull up both charts and I'll have them both up and I'll see if it's the same algo. Because if it's the same algo, then you can basically predict the move before it's going to happen.
And how are you like figuring out if it's the same algo? Is it just depending on how similar the chart is?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can see it inside the tape. You can see inside the volume bars. You can see inside the chart. You know, some algos are like a 3-bar on the 5-minute, and then they'll swipe it all the way down on the fourth bar. You know, and then 3 bars later, they'll swipe it back up, and then the fourth bar, they'll kill it again. But they're still moving it up inside the chart every single time, so they're tracking shorts. But that being said is that, you know, it's similar to you know, like – it doesn't have to be exactly similar. So, I mean, like 9:34 a.m., volume pop to the downside. You know, like that. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying on the broader picture, an hour, maybe 2 hours into market open, you know, we're going to get a pretty good view and we're going to be able to see the action. And then that's when you can go back to, you know, your, that's when you go back to, was it SPOA or SOPA?
SOPA. And,
Yeah, SOPA, and you can look at it and say, okay, what did this do? Is this similar? What's different? And if there's any similarities, those are the times where, you know, you can have a little more conviction. Like, that's an edge. Like, that's truly an edge.
Another thing that we mentioned last week, we talked about the whole pin thing, and again, on Thursday, so we didn't have all the info. It seems like, you know, Dave Portnoy's going on a lot about the whole thing about how people had puts on it. Unusual Whales got that retweet about it and everything. But also the earnings were like the same day. So, I mean, obviously people are always going to bet or going to buy calls or puts if that's the case. But it seems like he's going really hard at Business Insider. I mean, as you'd expect of Dave Portnoy if he's getting attacked on something that he didn't do. Do you think that makes him look like the innocent guy? Or do you think this is just Dave Portnoy being Dave Portnoy? Because the stock is still down a lot. It's only at, what, like 60 from 70, even after, I mean, it bottomed at like 57, I believe.
Yeah. And I'm going to kind of take the same position that we took last week, being that no matter what, nobody's a winner. Nobody's like, there's only losers inside this. I truly don't, you know, I have no bias, no edge here, but the one thing that I will say is that I know that if my reputation would be attacked inside
that kind of manner. Because, you know, most of the time, like, Dave Portnoy's been attacked before. Like he, in fact, he's attacked. He's probably one of the biggest individuals to be attacked on a yearly basis. But it's different this time. You know what I mean? Like it's different. Like, you're truly accusing him of some pretty...
Well, the thing is like, aside from the recording, like, without her consent, I think everything that was mentioned was all, like,
oh yeah,
just made him look like a bad guy, not like something you go to jail
for. And that's the difficult thing in this, is that it's truly, like, you know, when it's he said, she said, and you bring in this manner, you know, that's when, you know, like, I truly know that if I were inside a position, inside this position, I know that I would be so upset, and I would want, similar to Dave Portnoy, I'd be on every TV screen possible, you know, making this like a big thing, you know, like, I'd be shouting from the hills, like, hey, this is not me, like I wouldn't do that, you know, stuff like that. And so it's a tough position, because in one aspect, you know, I know for a fact that his lawyers are telling him not to do this. That's probably undisputed, because, you know, this is an ongoing manner. But inside the same token, I mean, listen, Business Insider, it feels wrong the way that they did it. Okay. I'm not disputing anything about what happened. I'm disputing the way that they did it. It feels scummy.
And you then, know, I the mean, same if you follow Dave Portnoy, I mean, it really is, like, he knows how to spin the narrative too. And it's so, the way he goes on the rant, the Business Insider isn't just going to post article after article, but Dave Portnoy will go after him every second of the day. Yeah. And he's got an army of people that love the internet that have looked up, you know, he's posting stuff about their Business Insider CEO and shit they did. He's like, this guy is a legitimate criminal, like, blah, blah, blah.
You know, that is the really interesting thing, is that Business Insider is promoting the article through advertisements. The CEO, you know, for anyone that doesn't know, Penn released earnings the same day, had scheduled releasing earnings the same day as this article came out. And the Business Insider CEO is actually been convicted for securities fraud. I mean, this is, like, wild. Like, this truly is, like, this. I do think that this will be something that goes down. That either way it goes down with Portnoy, whether it's good or bad. Like, this will be a story inside it, or, you know, a chapter inside the story, because it is kind of crazy. Because I personally, like, it feels like Business Insider was doing it for the wrong reasons. It truly does. To me, it feels like Business Insider was trying to, you know, go after Dave Portnoy, and on top of that, gain as many subscribers as possible from this piece, from this hit. I'll call it a hit piece, because this hit piece. Now, and on top of that, you know, it really didn't feel like legitimate. Like they know when Penn was scheduled to do earnings. They know that Dave Portnoy has $100 million inside Penn. Like, it doesn't feel right the way that they did it. They should have waited, or they should have done it way before. It feels like,
the timing of the release, the article, I mean, yeah, it's convenient for them, but I mean, it can't, like, you can't end, say like you shouldn't have released it that day.
Listen, I'm saying, listen, and I'm not going to comment on it, but I am going to comment on it. If somebody in Business Insider had Penn shorts, is 100, because, and at the end of the day, you know, you could say what you want about Portnoy, but Portnoy lost, like, what, 15, 20 million that day, because of where Penn ended. I don't know the exact number, but it's inside the millions. So if that was truly a reason that they released it on that day, and if we're going to say that's a coincidence, I still think that it was wrong.
I wouldn't say, I don't think it was a coincidence. I'm just saying, you can't say, you can't release an article about, like, something on the verge of sexual assault depending on the date of it just because a stock had earnings.
I agree. I totally agree. If this was the first day, like, finally they got some,
I just, but no, we can kind of move on from this, though. I'm just saying, like, it's crazy how much it's affected the stock. It's dropped a lot off of this hit piece. And it seems like, even though the mentality of the people watching are kind of now in Dave Portnoy's favor after hearing his side, the stock side of it is still reflecting the business insider side.
Oh, yeah, because the stock's not – I mean, seriously, like Dave Portnoy, even though I know that they refer to Barstool as Penn having interest in Barstool, I mean there's a lot of interest. Like it's not like like they own like, you know, 2-3%. So at the end of the day, you know, I don't know. I don't even know where this goes, you know. But it'll be interesting.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, well, moving on to one more thing that happened last episode that we got a good bit of interaction with on Twitter was your, you know, when we were live trading as we recorded. Now that you've had some time to cool off, reflect on whatever happened that kind of even made you feel like, hey, I'm going to step back a little bit from trading because of all these bad day trades. What did you learn? How did they happen? I know you blamed a lot of it on not sleeping, but at the same time, you still made the mistakes. Which ones could you have avoided? In looking back on it, and could you kind of walk us through some of them?
Truly, nothing really went wrong. It was just it's just one of those, and it wasn't like anything crazy. Like the losses weren't like, you know, freaking, you know, cutting my account in half. It was truly one of those things where 7 or 8 trades didn't work in a row, and it was just like the frustration was just overboiling. So that was the first thing, was that at 5 or 6 bad day trades, I should have at the bare minimum sized down. Like, just nothing was working. And it comes back to that mentality of like, you know, how many trades in a row can you lose? And the answer is, you know, infinite amount. So that was the first thing, was that I should have sized down because I was kind of like, okay, this one has to work because the last like 5 haven't. And the reality is that it didn't work. So that was like the first thing, is that the frustration boiled over. So what I should have done is that when nothing was working, I should have just sized down. The other thing that I should have done is that when we were recording, it hit my max loss on the day. And so if you get most funds and most prop shots, they have what's called a max loss. And that's where if a trader hits a certain monetary amount, losses intraday, then their literal brokerage gets like shut down. Like they get locked out. Sometimes they have to have a meeting with management. Sometimes it's just like they have to go home for the day. You know, they just have to step away so that they can't do any more damage. And the thing was that when that trade hit my stop loss, I had gone over my max loss for day trades, which was the first time in a while that had happened. And it just comes back to, when nothing was working, I should have sized down, because not only did it hit my max, like with the kind of size I was trading with, it's not like it just hit my max loss. Like I was like 20,000-30,000 over my max loss. So that's like a Honda Corolla or whatever, like a Honda CR. I don't even know. So the thing is that like I should have sized down. It wasn't working. I was into this mentality of, okay, the last 5 or 6 trades haven't worked. This one has to work. Again, the truth is that it doesn't have to work. You know, you can continue to,
you know, you can go to the casino and continue to put $50 down on black, and it can be
that bitch will be red every time.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a terrible mentality, and that was a terrible mindset. And then again, it comes back to I just wasn't into it. Like, my thesis was right, but I was sizing too heavy because the first trade that I took knifed hard on me. So then the next trade, I went heavier than my starter usually allows for. And I ended up slapping it up a good bit, and then it dipped. So then I added more, and then that one I ended up taking a loss with. So now I'm already two trades behind. And I'm already, like, I'm revenge trading at that point. Like, that is truly revenge trading at its core finest. As I took a loss, the next play I went in heavier than I would usually. It dipped. I bought more instantly without any confirmation of a curl, which is what we always talk about on this show. And it was tough, you know? Like, it was just tough because I was all out of whack. I don't ever usually let my emotions get to me. And the thing is that it wasn't really like the monetary amount. It wasn't anything like that. It was the frustration of those six or seven in a row. And even at that time, like, I knew what I had done wrong. I had revenge traded. I had revenge traded. I had let my emotions get the best of me. I was tired, so I was already irritable. You know, like, I wasn't feeling great. You know, like, I should have taken like my heart meds. Like, I was all over the map. And I was all over the place. And that's what it comes down to is that most of the time I'm pretty well center balanced. And there's a few times a year that I let things get the best of me. And with swings especially, you know, like when I'm in swings and, you know, something similar happens. I trade my plan, it doesn't work. You know, I have tons of hours of DD into this thing. You know, I have tons of man hours. I have a massive position size, so the opportunity cost, and it ends up going south on me. And it's not, it again, it's not so much the monetary amount, it's the frustration of just like, what the fuck? Like, all of that was for nothing? Like, are you kidding me? Like, the hours, the opportunity cost. Like, I sometimes run out of buying power, and it's like, oh my God, like, some of the other trades that worked that I didn't size enough because I ran out of buying power, those could have been bigger trades to the green side. So that's really what it comes down to for me at this point, is that you know, once or twice a year it comes down to frustration. So I'm always working on that aspect of it, but also at the same time I identify that, like, it's gonna happen. So that's why, you know, I come back. Came back Friday, sized down, had a fairly, you know, a good enough of a green day, not enough to make it all back, but it was still a green week, and I move on, and it's one of those like short term memories, like, hey, you know what, yeah, you know, like I look at my screens and I say, hey, you know, you got the best of me this week, you know, or, I mean, today, you know, this today you got the best of me, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where like. The market pushes your buttons for like 6 months, and then finally, like, you let one trade blow it all over and be the one that broke the camel's back, and you end up punching your drywall or something similar to that. You know, it's like, you know what, you got the best of me today. So that's the biggest thing is that. But on the flip side, what I'm able to do, which is what I wasn't able to do in, I'll say, like, the beginning of my career, is have that short-term memory loss. Like, Thursday could have been one of those days where I bring it to the table on Friday and I end up losing more on Friday. And then, you know, I go through the weekend miserable, and then I come back Monday and Monday I lose more. And that's one of those would be the times where I would literally cut my account into a third. It would take 3 days of hitting my max loss plus some, and you know, and it just being stupid, like just being stupid, like truly sizing heavier, you know, just what we talked about, truly sizing heavier, taking the loss, going into another trade immediately, even though it's probably not the best risk reward, taking that loss, and then going even heavier into the next one, taking that loss, coming back the next day and doing it all over again. So the one thing is that when I do identify inside myself that now I don't do that, which is a blessing, because sometimes in a matter of a week I truly could give up half of my gains on the previous year. So you know, It's one of those, you know, I'm happy that they, you know, listeners got to hear it. They got to see it, because a lot of times I get the DMs like, Hugh, like, you know, like, how do you control your emotions all the time? And the answer is always like, you know, like, you don't always get to control your emotions. You know, I can sit there and say all the time, control your emotions, control your emotions, control your emotions. But there's always going to be a few that get to you. And Thursday, while we were recording, was my one.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Well, glad you made it over that one. Going forward into, you know, the next few weeks, it seems like there's been a lot of people, you know, always preaching take profits, we're scalping around this position, and there's so many going on that it's like you can learn the personalities of these stocks, and there's two like ways, kind of like the price action, but also like there's also the range it moves. Like, yeah, I may do it during the beginning of the day, pop, and then drop at the end of the day, or vice versa. Or it could just have the same little price range, kind of like Wish has had recently. What do you think of, like, whenever these, like, new IPOs, which seem to be, like, kind of the new hot theme right now, how are you trading around them with, like, to learn their personalities when they're just, like, coming out?
Yeah, so the one thing that I do with, and I'll take this as both the IPOs and for just swing trades in general, a lot of times if I'm worried that I'm not going to, that like I'm not going to watch it closely enough, I'll actually buy like a tenth of a starter. So like literally the smallest position size, but still enough money to where I'm going to watch it. You know, if you have like a $100,000 account, maybe it's $500. You know, and that's so that like I can see the price action and I'm seeing the way that it moves. Like when I'm looking at my P&L and I'll see like maybe 10 a.m. I'll see that it's red, and then 2 p.m. I'll see that it's pretty green, you know, noticeably green. And again, it's not going to be a big position size, but if I go from down $5 to up $20, you know, that's interesting to me, and that's a pattern. And so if you continue to see that, you know, that's when, you know, you just start to ingrain, and you just start to watch, and you just start to get used to it, and you just and so just having it on and having a little bit on is the way that you can make the difference, in the way that you can watch the stock while also trading the things that you need to trade. Because, you know, I'm not going to watch 15, 20 different stocks just because they're interesting to me. But I'll take three or four and I'll just put a little bit on. And so I'll watch it for a week, maybe 2 weeks. You know, if it really starts to pique my interest, where we're seeing like one green day in a row, two green days in a row, three green days in a row, and now it's like four green days in a row, and I look back and there's kind of a buyer in there, that's when I'm going to get interested. But I wouldn't have known that it had green days, or I wouldn't be looking unless I had that smaller position size on. So the biggest thing for me is that I just like to put a little bit on. Same thing with swing trades, is that, hey, you know, even if I lose 10% of the entire position, it doesn't matter. Even if I lose 40%, it doesn't matter. But again, it's just little things that like that will lead to piquing my interest. So it's kind of like, hey, this has a good chart, you know, this has a good catalyst. Or as you were saying with the IPOs, is that, hey, this just IPO'd, this could be interesting, but I don't know how it trades. I don't know the personality of it. Okay, fine. You know, you don't need to buy a big position. Just, you know, maybe 500 shares, 1,000 shares. And you know, like I said, is that it's going to be the little tells that lead to you deciding if you like it or if you should watch it more or if you should just cut it. You know, if it doesn't even move all day and you're watching it for 2 weeks, fine, cut the pick. But like I said, is that it's those times where you're like, huh, that's its third day green in a row. That's its fourth day green in the row. And then I check it, and there's kind of some unusual volume in there. I'm kind of wondering, okay, what's going on here? Those are the times where you're like, yeah, like this system worked well, you know? And again, it doesn't have to be a big position, but it's just going to be like kind of watching it off the corner of the screen.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of these, you don't even have to really find the catalyst or anything in them. Kind of like how we were just talking about SOPA today. I mean, there are just some of these, and then when they find their sympathies and they're all just sprinting, how are you going to exactly catch the newest like IPO that's going to run as the sympathy to, like, you see SOPA just come out, it's going all day. How do you even find that sympathy for it?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I always like FinViz for my sympathies, you know, going back to the industry. And the other cool thing is that what you can do is that you can do like, you can actually sort it by IPO date. So it's something like, you know, if you have something in there that is a recent IPO, so let's take like, what was it? Dats and Yalla, I think it was. When Dats was running, Yalla, Y-A-L-A, was also a recent IPO, and it was awesome inside the same industry. And those are the times where you're like, oh, this is one of those times where you can say, okay, I can have a little bit of conviction with this because they're inside the same industry, and they're recent IPOs. So if either theme continues to be hot, or let's just say that both themes are hot, then it's one of those situations where, you know, you could, Yalla could go up like 100, 200%, which I think it did over the course of last month. So it comes down to, you know, finding edge. So if IPOs are starting to pop and you can find something inside the same industry that's also an IPO, then that gives you great risk to reward. And again, it's not going to be, you know, you can't just, you know, go slapping in there, you know, 10, 20, 100,000 shares. You still got to have DATS up or whatever, you know, the runner is. And if that one starts to fail, you know, you have to cut Yalla. But if you get into a situation where, you know, it, DATS is starting to go parabolic. Yalla is down at support. Maybe it's red 2%. You know, DATS is up 50, 60%. Those are the situations where you can find really good risk to reward.
Yeah, because I mean, when you find when they have two kind of, I don't even know how you'd say it, two characteristics
criterias
that make,
yeah,
two little characteristics together that make them run. I mean, and it's actually kind of crazy. You didn't really see one happen today with it, but I'm sure like as they start to develop, it just seems like today they were just focused on the main one instead of the sympathies.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the thing is that especially inside a market when it's hot, and there's so many different variables. So I don't want to just say, hey, if it's a recent IPO and IPOs are running and it's inside the same industry, you know, it's a no brainer. But you know, it's building that thesis. Even with day trades, it's building that thesis. You know, recent IPOs, same industry. You know, you see that there's a buyer inside the tape. Even more so, we're inside a hot market. You know, if this was July, maybe you don't touch it. But you know, maybe it's 2 weeks ago. You know, you're more interested, and you can take that chance. It's sitting on support. You know, like you're building the thesis. You know, it ran off open. You know, like it's stuff like that where you can build that thesis around it and give yourself edge. So it doesn't mean that it's always going to run if it's inside the same industry in a recent IPO. But again, it's building that thesis so that you have the maximum amount of edge possible.
Hey guys, if you're tired of trimming your stocks too early, well, let me tell you something. Never worry about trimming anything early ever again with Manscaped. Let me tell you about their performance package 4.0. It comes with free boxers, a toiletry bag, and free shipping with a little discount when you use code PGIR. I mean, it comes with the razor you need, the sprays you need. I mean,
dude, I mean, obviously, clearly I can't show you guys what's going on down there, but if I could, man, you guys would be amazed. Wireless charging, it's waterproof. Take it in the shower for all I care. I mean, it's going to get you right. It's got the light. Man, the Lawnmower 4.0 is the best trimmer I have ever used. And that's not all it comes with. It comes with hella other shit. Like the boxers, look, I get it. Not all of us are boxer guys. Give it to your girl. She'll like them too. But man, when it comes with the weed whacker, that shit's for your nose or ears. I mean, you could, God, Manscaped has something for every hole and crevice of your body. So make sure to use code PGIR on manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping. That's code PGIR on manscaped.com.
Okay, well, one more crazy fucking thing that happened this week is during the weekend, Elon Musk, the edgy CEO of Tesla, decided he would tweet about selling 10% of his Tesla shares. This was to do something about the fucking unrealized gain tax. Along with that, I mean, this is just a week after him tweeting about using around $4.6 billion to end world hunger. And so, you know, he's on some missions right now. And then one more interesting tidbit before I let you kind of take over here is his brother, the day before the weekend started where he tweeted this, sold 100-something million dollars worth of Tesla shares. I don't know if that's insider information trading or if that was just a lucky coincidence, but the stock is down 10% today. I am just assuming due to the fact that Elon Musk might share an absolute assload of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So 2 points is one about the brother. It's one of those things where it's like, that's interesting. But at the end of the day, you know, what's wrong with him selling shares? You know, is there anything that now, this is the way that, and this is the cool, well, I don't want to say the cool thing, but the interesting thing about securities is that, you know, did he sell before fundamentally knowing that something was going to change at Tesla? Did anything fundamentally change, like a recall, stuff like that? No. Is Elon Musk selling 10% of his stake in an interesting catalyst? Yes. So kind of like, where does this fall inside the degree of the interesting scale? Pretty damn high. But at the end of the day,
we've never had a CEO use a Twitter poll to decide where $100 billion worth of stock goes.
Yeah. And the other thing that I will say is that and this has absolutely nothing to do with most of this, but I don't feel like Elon is just going to take that. He's always, as we know, he's always 15 steps ahead. So if this is one of his like stunts to make a pullback in Tesla, you know what I mean? Hey, let me create my own pullback so that, you know, it then creates support so that I can pack in shorts. You know, everybody who is shorting is like, oh my God, this is the new high of Tesla. Tesla is going back to 500. Let me short. You know, Elon Musk starts selling. That's going to bring the stock down, comes down to supply and demand. And then it ends up that, like, Tesla ends up announcing something crazy. You know, like that's what we've seen. You know, I think it was, I saw a tweet the other day from like Brian Fidoldi or however the hell you say his name. And it was something along the lines of like, since he smoked weed on Joe Rogan's podcast, Tesla's up 2,200%. Since he said Tesla's overvalued, it's up 1,100%. So is this another game of his, you know, where like he creates the pullback to then slingshot this bitch to like 2,000? I don't know. But I wouldn't say it's out of the possibilities. And furthermore, based on that, Elon, as I just said, is always 5-10 steps ahead of everybody. So if he truly is selling 10% of his stake, one, I don't have an issue with it. He took so many risks with Tesla. He took so many big bets against himself. He was already a billionaire, and he basically went all in on Tesla. Like, he could have seriously been broke and from Tesla. So you know what? I'm fine with it. Get, you know, like take some realized gains. I'm totally cool with it. You know, you killed it. You know, you're killing it. You're not selling half of your position. You're selling 10%. Sure, go ahead, lock some money. And I'll say, if I had to make a bet, if this wasn't a game and he truly is selling 10% of his stake, I don't think that we see him with like some $50 billion yacht. Like, I think that this is bigger. I think that he's going to move this right into SpaceX or some other venture that is, you know, absolutely insane. He wanted to fund it himself and you know, he needed the funding and because it's going to be a lot of funding. And so he decided to take it out of his Tesla gains. And again, I'm totally fine with that. You know, you took tons of risks with Tesla. You know, you didn't sell this at the first whim. Like, Tesla stock was truly like a very small market cap like 3-4 years ago. And 3-4 years ago, even people were saying that's overvalued. Was he selling? No. You know, like, I'm fine with him selling it when they're a trillion dollar company. You know, like, you deserve it, big man. But like I said, part of me wants to think that this is a game by him, and he's doing this to pack in shorts to then announce some big announcement by Tesla and squeeze this thing to like 1700. He's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. Clearly, he knows what he's doing, and clearly he's played with the market before. And I wouldn't be shocked if this was another game by him.
Yeah, he's gonna take it all out and buy NFTs and Bitcoins with it. All right, guys. Well, that's about all we've got for this Wednesday's episode. We hope you have a fantastic Green Thursday and Friday, and we will see you Sunday.
Penny's Going in Raw is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.